Let's
Blog
do it.
Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah.
I said, oh, yeah. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Just for you, your main man, Marvin Throne, and a crew. Coming to you live. We got Brother Kevin Man on deck talking about Strange Bed Fellows. You won't want to miss that. We got Dr. Brother Bruce George. Much more. Anyway, there's no greater love than the Southern guy. No greater love. There's no better love. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. I'm your main man, Marvin Rohn, coming to you live. We've got another great show today. We'll be talking about history and culture. Brother Kebelin is going to bring it, so call somebody. Tell them, listen on demand or whatever you got to do, but you want to move up closer to your phone or your computer or your speaker, whatever that is, to just want to be sure that you take some notes because, again, this is historically relevant information that we give and we try to educate, telling our stories in our own way to help us increase our potential to grow and become better each day, every day, one day at a time. And so let's talk about the tenets of the NAAEA. It's that National African American Empowerment Association that is designed to enhance the lives of African American, right? And the way in which we feel, along with many, many others, that we can really get a grasp on our American experience as it then transcends to international experience, is to understand politics. Right, to get a really great understanding of the political system, the American political system, and how it works. That system of law and justice, right? Policing, all of those things that can impact you, whether you're driving down the road or whether your child has committed a crime or whatever that is. We have to understand the law and understand how to, one, stay in harm's way, out of harm's way of the law, but also to be able to use that law as a tool, right, for our advancement and our education, right? We got to commit to making sure that we understand the political system here in America and how it works. Next is the economic system. It's the E. I'm spelling out peace. We need to understand economics, money management, right, capitalism, the system for economic advancement, and the system that is being used in this country to create finances and resources and how we play into that, right? We got to understand consumerism, right? We got to understand the basis for economic advancements and the foundations that we use to resources for our communities, right? That way we can begin to build institutions that define our own reality with the resources that we get, that we can employ our people, give them a living wage or earning potential that they can go and provide for themselves. We want to become producers again, producing our own shoes, our own underwear, our own clothes, our own toothbrush, our own toothpaste, and anything else that we can imagine that we can create. But let's start somewhere with producing economics that we can then put toward the development of institutions for our young people that they can go and advance their cause. Next is the A, relevant programs that really look at health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. That is the A, taking care of your body, making sure that your temple is fit and healthy, that you're putting the right things in and that you're taking care of yourself for the long term, right? Getting away from the health disparities. And then looking at mental health and mental wellness as a foundation for longevity. And that way that we can be here as long as we can for our next generation to learn directly from us and not have our lives to end so early or prematurely because of our habits and our ways. Next is C, relevant cultural programs like this one to really enhance our feeling about ourselves. The education gives you confidence. The education allows you to put your chin up, chest out, be proud of who you are, how you look, and the achievements of your ancestors, right? So when we say the slaves, we have to change that to say the enslaved Africans, right? Not the slaves, because they have no identity. They're our ancestors, and we're going to honor them with our actions and our words. And we must change the culture and the climate of our behavior in order to do that. Next and lastly is the education piece, a comprehensive education that really looks at how we can get better at being ourselves. We got to learn now, right, how to navigate these systems and how to become the best people that we can be today and every day. Join us, www.naaea.info. And now it's time for our Willie Lynch. No, Stan Macklin moment.
Oh. Man, Stan, right. The deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify. Let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on Earth.
You know, brothers and sisters, Brother Stan is right. We got to stop trying to get in to fit in. We need to create institutions that define our own reality. But we're going to have to do that work. We are, right? We know, and here in our city, we had a lot of violence this weekend. We're going to have to figure out some things as men and women to be able to corral our children, right? To be able to educate them in self-love, right? But also to give them the resources and the tools necessary to cope with conflict, but also to cope with poverty. And that is to be able to get out of it, right, in a sound way, and that we must learn to love and take care of each other. And that is the process of doing that one day at a time. And that's what's going to have to happen for us to recapture our African minds and regain our self-love and love for ourselves. It's now time for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Here's Brother George. Come on, brother. Oh, yeah. Bring it.
Bring it. What?
Hey, Mom. Right here. We right here.
We're not going anywhere.
Nowhere.
Right here.
Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. How about yourself?
Good news. I'm doing well. I'm trying to recapture my African mind. That's what I'm doing. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I feel blessed.
All right. What you got for us today?
Now, today's principle from the Nguza Saba. Some principles I like to emphasize on more than others. And one of those is Kuji Chagalia, self-determination. To define for ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. I think that's something that's very important in the time that we're in now and in the days to come. Kuji Chagalia, this symbol represents patience, self-containment, self-discipline, and self-control. Without these things, we cannot grow into responsible, well-balanced, and productive members of our family and our community. These qualities, along with honesty and respect to all living things, are essential to the development of our character and help to determine the outcome of our lives, positive or negative, in this lifetime. Now, with the Willie Lynch segment, once again, I want to read out of a book that I've been focusing on with our group at Armstrong High on Monday. I think it's very focused, and it allows young men to see a real picture of how the mind functions. And the name of that book is The Mathematics of the Mind by Brother Nuri Muhammad, or student minister Nuri Muhammad. When we look at the term kingdom, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan teaches that kingdom, it's really a compound word. It is king and then dome. As the dome is round, is the round part of that existence at the top of a structure, so it is with the human head. The kingdom of God is within you, and if God is the kingdom in our dome, we will live in heaven. But if the devil is the king in our dome, we will live in hell. When we really understand and know this, we no longer will ask anyone without God. Let me go back. We will no longer ask anyone whether God runs things or whether Satan runs things. We need only examine what kind of life we're living. Do we have peace and contentment of mind? Do we have harmony and balance with others? Do we have luxury, money, good homes? Do we have friendship in all walks of life? No. Well, sometimes, well, a little bit. If we have a little bit of this and a little bit of the other, this means the majority of the time the devil is ruling, and sometimes God is ruling. When God becomes the king in our dome, we will not only live in heaven, but we will leave a little heaven behind everywhere we go. And I thank the brother for writing this book, because it's given me the opportunity to really be able to get a good understanding of how our mind works and how we can actually control it and lead our lives into a positive state through our mind. So, brother, if you have something for me, you know you can, but that's my segment for today.
Thank you, Brother George. Another great segment. I love that book. We got to continue to encourage our listeners to read and enhance themselves. But I just wanted to say this and get your feedback on it before we go to the empowerment question of the week. The teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the great Elijah Muhammad, is just not for Muslims, right? Or African-American Muslims. It's for all our people. What are your thoughts on that? And then I'll go to the empowerment question of the week.
Well, the thoughts on that are that the teachings are for all human beings. The general focus was to rehabilitate the condition of black people in this country after we experienced the slave period in this country, but we experienced slavery. And our minds were twisted up. Our sense of self-worth was taken away. A lot of the things that makes a human being were taken away because they wanted to dehumanize us. So the major focus, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad wanted to do was to rehabilitate our minds and rehabilitate how we think about the world and how we think about others. And so there is some information that some people might want to dispute, you know, over what he said. you know, but essentially the teachings are for everybody. But in the beginning, it's for black people. It's for the black man and woman so that we can rehabilitate ourselves and get ourselves back to a state of nationhood. And so the way I know that is he mentioned that he really felt that the best solution for our people was for us to be placed on some separate states or some states set aside for black people to build our own nation, and that the United States would help us for a period of time of between 20 and 25 years, and then we could go for ourselves because we're a disciplined group. We're a disciplined people, and we could make it. But in the beginning, sometimes you need a little help. You need a little push. But after that, working with other racial groups as far as economics and all of that, the nation did that back then, and they do it now. You know, so no, it is. It's for everybody.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. That work is continue to work on our minds and work on ourselves. And now it is the empowerment question of the week. Where does self-determination start? Specifically, where does African-American self-determination begin?
It begins at home. It begins when children are very little. And the time that their parents take to teach our children positive self-images and taking time with them to teach them how to treat other people, how they would like to be treated, being loved and shown affection, all of these different things are what helps to determine the future of our children, you know, especially the kind of things that you read to them and the kind of things that you allow them to be exposed to. Because a great example of maybe some of the things that our children should not have been exposed to was the violent video game. Because it seems like those video games have come to life in our community. And so we have to really think about what it is that we want to use as a self-determining factor with our little children. So that's my answer, bro.
Thank you, Brother George. Great response. Great answer. You know, we need patience, right? We're in a process. We need parents. We need self-control. We need honesty. We need respect. We need love for ourselves. But we also need role models, right? Positive role models. We need mentors. We need somebody who is willing to stand in the gap in the community, in the school, in the community centers, in the churches, in the trenches, where it really matters and counts the most. We're asking you to make a commitment, right? To some child, right? Some church, some synagogue, some mosque, somewhere where you can stand in the gap and start helping our kids because they need it. They need guidance. They need love. They need support. And they need you. Well, somebody might say, well, I got my own kids to worry about. That's good. Make sure you're taking these steps, right, of teaching them self-discipline, teaching them how to read and write effectively and efficiently, and teaching them how to manage their anger and control their behavior. If you do that, we'll be just fine as we continue to recover from the situations that we find ourselves in. All right, 845-277-9250 is the number to call today. Slido is in the 395473. I'll say it again. 845-277-9250 is the call in the live mind if you want to talk to me or Brother George or Brother Kevin about the lecture as we go along. Or you can hit us up on Slido at 139-5473, and that's slido.com. That's slido.com. And also go out to our website, www.naea.org. info, I-N-F-O, to learn more about the African American Empowerment Association. And you can also become a member. Anyway, we have Black Educational Prints as well. Go out there and purchase one of the T-shirts. We're raising funds for our youth programs. All right, well, we're doing lunch each week for young males, and then we'll branch out and continue to do that work. But we need your support, so we're asking. Go out there and buy a T-shirt and give to the NAAEA so we can continue to do this work. All right, once again, 845-277-9250 is the call-in line, or Slido at slido.com. The code is 1395473. And now, the man that you've been waiting for, without further delay, is Brother Akebele, and his topic today is strange bedfellows. Strange bedfellows. Here he is. Here he comes. Put on your seatbelts. Buckle up. Brother Akebele. Welcome to the show, brother. You're right here. You're listening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. How you doing, brother?
What's up, my brother?
You can hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
All right. As I mentioned earlier, my message today is titled Strange Bedfellows. Strange Bedfellows. And my head is kind of spinning trying to put some stuff together before the program. So we'll see. Our ancestors, Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. Yosef Benyakana, also known as Dr. Ben, was the best of friends. And they would have healthy debates. Dr. Clark, in paraphrasing, said he didn't debate fools. People argue for argument's sake without no means of substantiation. He only debated his equals. Dr. Ben was his equal. Dr. Clark, born January the 1st. Dr. Ben, born December the 31st. I call it the first and the last. They were equals. If they were alive today, they both would be in their hundreds. They agreed on a lot, but differed on the status of Cleopatra to African people. Dr. Clark said Cleopatra was a great statesman. Dr. Ben, and those of you who know Dr. Ben, doesn't bite his tongue. He said she was a whore. I love them both and what they did for African people. Therefore, instead of taking sides right away, I decided to do my research before coming to the conclusion which one was right on what Cleopatra means to African people. In Dr. Chancellor Williams' monumental work, The Destruction of Black Civilization, 1875, page 113, wrote, when Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt unified itself, the question was never over unification, but who would rule the land after unification was completed? The whites of the Delta, or the blacks of southern Ethiopia? The southern Ethiopians were bitter because they had to fight the integrationist blacks of Egypt just as hard as they had to fight the whites from lower Egypt and Libya. Ethiopia was no more prepared to accept all white rule. They trusted the mixed breeds less because of their ability to play either the white or black role as it suited their purpose. In other words, they were fence straddlers. I'm going to say something. I don't want my words to be twisted. I don't want anyone to quote me in part. If you're going to quote me, quote my words in its entirety. I don't mean to offend anyone in the human family. And if you misquote my words, that may be what you are doing. My position is, you have no control of who your parents are. There are some people that are mixed, called mulattoes back then. There have been a lot for African people, and some has damaged us as well. There are some dark complexion people who have done much to elevate African, otherwise black people. There are some of those who have done damage to us as well. I recognize that, and I don't mean to be divided on skin color. My issue is with the unseen hand. Those in power who said by virtue of her light skin and closeness to whites, she should be upstairs in the office behind a desk, while her equally beautiful friend, who was dark-skinned, remained downstairs doing hard work. My problem is those powers in control who, in selecting candidates for said positions, decided that a person who is mulatto by virtue that they have a black parent and a white parent are not going to go so far on the black side because they have dual loyalties, therefore non-threatening. They are chosen for said positions. Those in power decide if you have a white spouse, they don't have to worry about you being too black because you have to go home to Sally. The qualified candidate, black husband, and black spouse are not chosen. Already, some of you might be leaving. I remember Dr. Ben saying, I see some people leaving. I don't blame you. It's some rough stuff here today. For those of you bold enough to stay with me, allow me the opportunity to prove what I just said from the local, state, and national level of government. Where I speak, I'm always way out there. So I have to substantiate what I'm saying. To those that are still here with me, allow me to prove that in every key position I'm about to mention, the first person to occupy that position was mixed, usually one parent white. Let's get ready. The local level. The first black to serve as mayor of a United States town was in St. Martinsville, Louisiana. His name was Monroe Baker. He served from 1867 to 1868. He was of mixed, the first black elected mayor. Listen carefully, the difference between one who is served as a mayor and one who has been elected. The first black elected mayor of a U.S. town served in Donaldsonville, Louisiana. His name was Pierre Caliste, Calliste, Landry, Landry. He was elected in 1868. His mother was Rosemary Landry, a white laborer. Let's move on up to the state level. The first black governor was P.S.B. Pinchback. He was governor of Louisiana from December 6, 1871 to January 13, 1873. His father was white. His father was his brother's master. Move on up to the national level. The first black to serve as the president of the United States was mulatto. Today's term, mixed. Barack Hussein Obama II served January 20, 2009 to January 20, 2017. His mother was of English, Welsh, German, Swiss, and Irish descent. The first black to serve as vice president of the United States, Kamala Harris, mixed, Indian, Afro-Jamaican, Irish-Jamaican. Her husband, Douglas Emhoff, is the second gentleman of the United States. As the first husband of a vice president, Emhoff is the first second gentleman in American history. He's also the first Jewish spouse of a vice president. Let's go to United States Congress. You got the House and you got the Senate. The first black to serve in the House of Representatives, Joseph Rainey. His mother was indigenous and French. He served 1868 to 1870. The first black senator, Harold, I still see a lot of questions. The first black senator, Harold Rose Rubble, December 30th, 1872 to 1873. His mother was of Scots descent. These are key positions that govern your life. Let's go to United States Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas is not going to get too black because he had to go home to Miss Jenny. Ketanji Brown Jackson has to go home to Patrick. I'm not saying those who are mixed have not done some good and have not taken military stances. But so many, in doing so, remain loyal to their European or white base. Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass were mulatto. Today we say mixed and lose sight that the first black president was mulatto. In an article you can find online titled Delaney and Douglass, Brothers in the Fight for Freedom, it's a comparison between Frederick Douglass, who was mulatto, and Delaney, both parents black. Delaney was militant, Frederick Douglass was militant, but there's a different militancy. I'm a quote from this article by Richard Lawson Stingley, S-I-N-G-L-E-Y, Richard Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N-S-I-N-G-L-E-Y, Stingley, published in The Shadow, February 14, 2021. Published in The Shadow, February 14, 2021. I want you to hear the comparisons between Martin Delaney and Frederick Douglass. In the article, he said Frederick Douglass Now, Madeleine, let's go with Madeleine first. In the article, he says, Madeleine quoted Herodotus and supported his contention that the world was indebted to African people. Delaney was the son of a freeborn mother and a slave, like the black abolitionist David Walker before him. Delaney was proud of his African heritage and blackness, that he believed a mulatto could never lead the black race because whites would always attribute his achievements to their blood. This is Delaney speaker. This is not Brother Akeblon. Delaney was a man that would have felt at home a century later. He often wore African clothes in public. He frequently boasted that he was the most African man in the United States. He backed it up, not only with words, but actions. To say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud in the 60s is one thing, but to say it in the 1860s is another. In fact, Delaney could be considered the first Afrocentrist. In a speech to St. Cyprian, spelled C-Y-P-R-I-A-N, in a speech to the St. Cyprian Masonic Lodge, a lodge which he helped to found, he said the following. Egypt was an African society, an offshoot of a more ancient Ethiopia, and that Greece and Rome stole from Egypt. He gave his children Afrocentric names, such as Ethiopia and Ramesses. Delaney, like Paul Cuff and others, viewed America as a white man's country. And like Douglass, he believed that black people should migrate back to Africa. He said, we are a nation within a nation. We must go from our oppressor. This was Martin Delaney in the 1800s, not the 1900s. Like many whites, Delaney did not believe in black people integrating with white people. He dispelled the myth that all black men wanted to have sex. He dispelled the myth that all black men wanted to have sex with white women, a myth well propagated by white men. He often asserted that in the long story of history, it was the white man that followed in the footsteps of the black man and not the other way around. He believed that as long as black people tried to emulate white people and viewed their blackness as a curse instead of a blessing, they could never discover who they are. Now let's go to Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass had a certain militancy. He made a couple of militant statements, and one was when they called him to speak for the 4th of July. Sometimes you call someone to speak, and they don't always go the direction you intended for them to go. So in Frederick Douglass' response, he said, search out every abuse, and we have found the last. Lay your facts by the side of everyday practice of this nation, and you will see with me, therefore, revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without rival. Now, that's a bold and militant statement. Frederick Douglass, a man who took his freedom, a man who earned the respect of white leaders and the love of white women. During his lifetime, he was the hub of the wheel that the black community revolved around and a nexus between the white and black communities. He advised John Brown and consulted with presidents. He pressed for emancipation, civil rights, women's rights, and later protested against Jim Crow laws and the practice of lynching. So yes, he did a lot of good. Douglass was not only admired by black people, white people, including white women, also found him fascinating. Although Douglass' marriage to a white woman is well recorded in the annals of history, what is little known is that he had several affairs with white women. His relationship with Ottilie Assing, I'll spell that for you, Ottilie Assing, Assing. His relationship with Ottilie for over 20 years is perhaps the most provocative. Ottilie was a member of the upper white class. She wrote letters to Douglass, providing him with financial support, often picked him up at the train station, and spent summers with him. For instance, Douglass sought refuge in her Hoboken, New Jersey apartment in the immediate aftermath of the John Brown raid. She was certain that after Douglass' wife, Anna Murray, died, he would marry her. But her dreams did not come true. After Douglass' wife died, he married his wife's secretary, Helen Pitt, in 1882. In August of 1884, Ottilie committed suicide, leaving her estate to Douglass. In her will, she requested all of the letters between the two of them be destroyed. To Ottilie, there could be only one Desdemona, for a slave born in articulate Othello. To forever remain a psychic caught in Cupid's spell, her book of love was now closed, with no more stories to tell. Frederick Douglass once said, "I thank God for making me a man." But Delaney thanked God for making him a black man. Let me repeat that. Frederick Douglass said, "I thank God for making me a man." Delaney said, "I thank God for making me a black man." That same scene was played out in the movie, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I'm going to play that scene now, and I hope you can hear it.
You say you are telling me how to, but what do you think you've been doing? You tell me what rights I've got or haven't got and what I owe to you for what you've done for me? Let me tell you something. I owe you nothing. If you carried that bag a million miles, you did what you were supposed to do. Because you brought me into this world. And from that day, you owed me everything you could ever do for me, like I will owe my son if I ever have another. But you don't owe me. You can't tell me when or where I'm out of line, or try to get me to live my life according to your rules. And you don't even know what I am, Dad. You don't know who I am. You don't know how I feel, what I think. And if I try to explain it the rest of your life, you will never understand. You are 30 years older than I am. You and your whole lousy generation believe the way it was for you is the way it's got to be. And not until your whole generation has lain down and died will the dead weight of you be off our back. You understand? You've got to get off my back.
Now, I hope you heard that. For the young writers who's listening, who might not be familiar with the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, the movie came out in 1967. That would be 3 years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And Sidney Holmes, Porter brings home a white woman. And he didn't like his dad's reaction to it. When I first saw this movie, I was very young. And when you see a person go against his dad, as a young person, 12 or 13 years old, go ahead, I'm rooting for Sidney. Go ahead, tell your dad off, right? But now that I'm near 70, I look back on that movie. It's not so much that a right and wrong. It's from different perspectives. Sidney Poitier was looking at the world the way it should be. His dad was looking at the world the way it is. You wasn't recognized as a man. Certain rights you were entitled to as a man, you wasn't getting. Looking at it today, what Sidney Poitier said, you see yourself as a black man. I see myself as just a man. Same thing with Frederick Douglass. I see myself as a man. Delaney saw herself as a black man. I present this to you. If you go to the store looking for a pet, and the clerk says, looking for a dog, the clerk says, what do you want? I want a dog. What kind of dog do you want? I want a dog. It makes a difference. Do you want more protection? Then I'll give you a Doberman Pinscher or a pit bull. And I'm going to give you a chihuahua. If you want something to color under you, I'll give you a chihuahua. If you want a prize dog for a contest, it depends on what kind of dog. Yes, they're all dogs, but there are different kinds of dogs. If you go into a flower nursery, and they ask you tell the clerk, I want some flowers. The clerk will ask you, what kind of flowers do you want? Get some flowers. But now it makes a difference. If it's for a funeral, you don't want dandelions. It's for wedding, certain flowers. So, yes, we are people. By the fact that he said you see yourself as a black man, acknowledge the fact that he is a man. So we know that. But there are different cultural norms. And what's bad, make better for a better bouquet of flowers is recognize these cultural norms. What's not spiritual is to put everything in one pot and put it all together and mix it all up and call it multiculturalism, because you really don't want to deal with differences. So Peter Poitier's perspective was from the way the world should be. But his dad was saying, right now, you're not recognized as a man. In order for you to be recognized as a man, and you have to know who you are as a people. Know your role in the totality of things. Because at that particular time, Europeans did everything. And we didn't do anything. So you have to know who you are first. I hope that y'all heard that video. If you didn't, let me know. It's online. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? It's on a clip that says, You Don't Own Me. I have the original video, but if you want that clip, it says, You Don't Own Me. Back to Destruction of Black Civilization by Chester Williams. Williams goes on to say, the enemy did the usual strategy of marriage alliance of black ruling families with white males. These alliances, after worming their way to power through the African inheritance, which was the female line, matrilineal, they could change the system from an African matrilineal system to the Asian and European patrilineal system. Let me repeat that. Africa had a system that was matrilineal, female line. If a man was on the throne, he was on the throne because of who his mother was, not who his father was. So if he didn't rule justly, the women could get together and have him dethroned. This scheme for achieving power over blacks through blacks did not escape those that are alert, and it does not escape me. Let's go back to Cleopatra's rise to power to find out if it was matrilineal or patrilineal. Egypt, the African name was Kemet, was black in the earlier dynastics or family rule. A dynasty is family rule. Egypt, African name Kemet, was black in the earlier dynastic or family rule. There were no invaders. Egypt became Persian, Greek, and Rome later, which was a mixed population, like the United States. Saying the United States was white originally because the U.S. president is white is a misnomer. To say Cleopatra is black, knowing she ruled in the last dynasty and not the first, is a misnomer. She was mixed. Cleopatra VII, Queen of Egypt, was not Egyptian. She wanted to rule Egypt. For the dynasty, when Egypt was black, like the first 12 dynasties and a few ones after that, for the dynasties when Egypt was black, go on YouTube, type in free your mind, return to the source, part two, by Asa G. Hilliard III. I repeat, go to YouTube, type free your mind, return to the source, part two, by Asa G. Hilliard. Asa, A-S-A, G, period, is the middle initial, is last name Hilliard. H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D, the third. It's on YouTube. It has a chart of where Africa, when Egypt was black and when Egypt was mixed. Cleopatra was in the last dynasty, which was clearly mixed with Greeks, and it was Ptolemaic, P-T-O-L-O-M-A-I-C. And no telling what else was doing there, probably the Persians. Chancellor Williams said, I'm reiterating what he said. He said, white males married black women in ruling families and changed the system from matrilineal female line to patrilineal male line, like today. You have your father's last name, not your mother. Cleopatra's mother is unknown. Her father was Ptolemy the 12th. And I have to spell this out. Ptolemy, P-T-O-L-E-M-Y, Roman numerals X-1-1. Last name, or if that's a last name, A-U-L-E-T-E-S. That was his name. Her father was named after founder of the Ptolemy dynasty. That person was Ptolemy I Soter, S-O-T-E-R. Cleopatra belonged to the Macedonian Greek dynasty, or the Ptolemies. Their European origins traced back to northern Greece, while Cleopatra's paternal line, her father line, can be traced. The identity of her mother is uncertain. She was queen because of who her father was. I repeat, she was queen because of who her father was, not her mother. This is patrilineal. Just like Elizabeth of Britain. Don't call her queen. Don't bestow a title to her. Don't bestow a title to her, a title you would not bestow upon your own mother, who is the true queen. Elizabeth became queen not because of who her mother was, it was because who her father was. Her father was King George VI. It was through his lineage that Elizabeth became queen. during her grandfather's reign, Elizabeth was third in line of succession of the British throne behind her uncle Edward and her Prince of Wales and her father, King George. When her grandfather died in 1936 and her uncle succeeded as Edward VIII, she became second in line to the throne after her father. But this is what happened. Edward fell in love with a divorcee, and he did a Prince Harry, and renounced the throne to marry a divorced American socialite named Wallis Simpson, W-A-L-L-I-S-S-I-M-P-S-O-N. Elizabeth's father became king, taking the title King George VI. Since Elizabeth had no brothers, she became heir. If her parents had a son, he would have been above her in the line of succession, which was determined by the male line at the time. Do you remember, Elizabeth had a sister. We never hear anything about her sister being next in line. It was always Charles. In conclusion, I want to hear one of our political analysts speak. This was many years ago. He knew that Europeans would let you have one of their women if it would help them get what they wanted. He asked the sisters in the room if they would turn a trick with the enemy for the liberation of African people. No sister in the room raised their hand. Then he scorned the sisters. He said, y'all ain't serious like they are. I was appalled that he would ask our beautiful black sisters to turn a trick with the enemy in order to elevate us as a people. I wrote him a letter. I expressed that I was appalled that he proposed that to the sisters. I did not get a response from my letter and thought he didn't get it. The next time he came to Richmond, he said to the audience, I got a letter from Brother Kavanaugh expressing how appalled he was the last time I was here with me asking the sisters if they would turn a trick for African people. Then Kavanaugh asked me this question. He said, would you take meat in the back for African people? And I'm speaking in cold language now. I asked him if he would take meat in the back for African people. He said, I thought about that. I didn't think long. He said, I love y'all. I don't love y'all that much. Then he apologized to the sisters. When we say by any means necessary, we need to add a qualifier. It must be honorable means. Malcolm X was not going to do anything dishonorable. You have to give your body for liberation. We already lost. Cleopatra was the descendant of its founder, Ptolemy I, a Macedonian Greek general and companion of Alexander the Great. After the death of Cleopatra, Egypt became a province of the Roman Empire, which means she did all those tricks, had three children by Antony, and Egypt ended up in the hands of Rome. Let me repeat. After the death of Cleopatra, Egypt became a province of the Roman Empire, which means she did all those tricks, had an affair with Caesar, had an affair with Antony, had three children by Antony, and Egypt ended up in the hands of Rome. Her first language was Greek, not Egyptian. She was the only known for Thomas Ruler to learn the Egyptian language. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I read. New information may come up saying that other people learn the Egyptian language as well. But that wasn't her language from the beginning. She had to learn it. Her language was Greek. Her heir to the throne was patriarchal, not matrilineal. Her father was Ptolemy, named after the founder of the Ptolemy dynasty. It's generally believed that the Ptolemies did not intermarry with native Egyptians, further arguing that Cleopatra probably did not have any Egyptian ancestry and would have described herself as Greek. It would not make much difference to me. I'm just looking at action. Cleopatra was a Macedonian Greek with some Persian ancestry. She was the Kamala Harris of her day. Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. Joseph Benjamin Carter were the best of friends and would have healthy debates. Dr. Clark said Cleopatra was a great statesman. Dr. Ben, who didn't bite his tongue, said she was a whore. What do you think? Brother Marvin, it's your show.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, thank you, thank you. What a knowledge, great
video,
perspective,
Marvin.
You always.
Sir?
Could you hear the video?
Yes, loud and clear. Came in perfectly.
All right, go ahead.
Listeners were able to get the point, but a great point. So we thank you for a great lecture, and we'll give you a moment to, kind of wind down, get you some water as we move into our communication part of the show. We got a wealth of comments on the Slido side, so I'd like for you to address some of those, and Brother George can join us as well.
Well, go ahead.
845-277-9250 is the call-in line, 845-277-9250, or you can hit us on Slido, Slido.com, 1395473. Go ahead, brother. What's your comment?
I look at some of these questions, right? I was going to say that I appreciate it. I have a lot of comments, which lets me know they were listening, so I appreciate the comments. I see one question says, Kevlon, can you explain why it is important to add qualifiers to our discussion, desires or endeavors? And I think I did that, and sometimes when we talk, we don't explain ourselves well. We quickly say by any means necessary. That means we think that anything we do is justifiable as long as we reach our end goal. And I was saying that instead of saying by any means necessary, it had to be a qualifier, had to be added. What you're about to do, it has to be an honorable means. Because if you go tell me you could do some, I hope you understood me when I said the person, asked when he takes media in the back. I hope you always understood what I was meaning when I said that. But,
I got it.
You got it? All right, good. So I'm saying that when I say we need to qualify by any means necessary, doesn't mean go out and do a trick, to get some money to for African people. Does it mean go out there and anything heinous, That's why I say it has to be qualified. You just can't just say by any means necessary, and that would mean they're kind of vague. That means anything. No, it got to be honorable means. Malcolm wasn't going back to his old ways just to, for us to be liberated. He wasn't going out there and pimp no sister in order to liberate African people, because that was behind him.
That's right.
So this is what I was saying.
That's
what I was saying, that when I said qualifiers, we got to add something to it. It got to be honorable means. You just can't just be doing stuff just because you just can't be saying by any means necessary without add some to it, and the qualifier is it must be honorable means. With all the confusion,
all right, thank you, sir.
with all the confusion based around our identity, how do you suggest we learn who we are? And one thing, too, about identity, right, I want you to focus so much on the color. I was just presenting issues we have in the past to you, right? But actions speak louder than words. Because look at African Power, very light skin. And he did a lot for African people. And you got I can name a whole lot of, but I just don't want to go to that, right? But you need to study, a constant study, and find who you are. And when you see contradictions, right, question those contradictions. And go to lectures like this. Answer that question is when you turn on your radio to come to this program. That was one effort right there. Coming out of slavery, I have amazed that our people had the skill to hold positions of power. What in the world are we doing in this time and era? Well, when coming out of slavery, a brother was looking for a sister. A sister was looking for a brother, right? And yes, we lost our name, our language, our history, our culture, right? But we're pretty much glued. I think most people on this program, especially me, when I grew up, we had a fish market around the corner, black owned. We had a TV repair, black owned. John, Attorney Taylor's daddy, he repaired our televisions. Our doctor was black. He came to the house, spanked me on my butt. I remember my doctor was black. The funeral home's still black. The barbers are black. We didn't have a black grocery stores, we had black stores. I mean, we didn't have no big grocery store like Walmart back then, but we had community grocery stores that were owned by us. We had our own restaurants. Matter of fact, where I lived at, it was 25th and Broad. We had those in Richmond, the Arnitas, Rendezvous, Hudson Brothers, you know, Cleaners. So, and after they did the experiment called integration, we thought that white iced tea was better than black iced tea. You know what I mean? So that's what happened. And today, some things today is based on technology. For example, it was nothing for George and I and others to go to Durham, North Carolina, to no bookstore and pay $300 for books. We didn't have all the money. We would pull our money together. We get $300 worth of books. Today, you got internet. And people can go online and get it from other people. So technology also is an important thing that got in the way of that. I'm still about to find another question. I like the comments. I appreciate the comments. The issue of color has been created by those in power. We must shift our focus toward empower. Now, that's a good point. That's a good point. She said the issue of color has been created by those in power. When Sidney Poitier said his dad told his daddy, right, you see yourself as a colored man. I see myself as a man. His daddy and those like him weren't the ones that said that this one should be black and this one should be white. It wasn't him that did that. We must shift our focus toward empowering our minds. We must understand and embrace our true identity. I'd like somebody to call in and discuss the video or your opinion on Sidney Poitier and his discussion with his daddy. I'd like somebody to call in and discuss Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben, where Dr. Clark said he looked at Cliff Hodges as a great statesman, and Dr. Ben said she was a whore. So let's get some comments on that.
All right. Thank you, brother. And we'll start with our favorite student here on our online classroom. We'll start with Brother Lush. Brother Lush, welcome to the show.
I knew it was him. I know it was him.
Question and comment. He's consistent. Brother Lush,
thank you,
welcome.
Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much for picking my call, and good afternoon, everyone. Very interesting topic, Brother Kibolan. And there was a couple that you had turned my attention to some time ago last week. And I was thinking about Betsy Coleman and William Wiles, the gentleman that had died with her during her experience. And the article that you sent was an opinion, in an opinion page, in the Chicago Defender. And so I want to focus on Betsy Coleman, because in looking at images of Betsy Coleman, she was a light-skinned black woman, from what I gathered, and there were some things that she experienced that not very many black women at that time during 1926, 27, 28, 29 didn't have privy to, right? As a matter of fact, she was asked to go to France to learn French and learn the culture and then come back, and she would have an experience that would kind of bring her up to a higher height. Let me ask you, when looking at women, especially light-skinned women, who can tear, do you think that this thing with identity really gets lost somewhere, and it's, I guess, for observers outside of her to determine or judge of what her identity is, or is it something that's common?
I don't know if I answered your question, but I feel sorry for them too, because I know a girl in school, she was very light and she looked almost white. She didn't bother anyone. She didn't bother anyone, and you would have to take naps at school. We was like in sixth grade, and after she wake up, the girls had cut her hair. Her hair went all the way back to her backside. They cut her hair real short. So you think you cute. You think you better than us. The girl was quiet. She didn't think she was cuter than you. You thought you was ugly. And I know another person who said the same thing. He had really dark curly hair, right? And he, all the years, guys kept picking on him, right? And he realized that he got an old man. When he was about 55 years old, he realized that they didn't hate him. They hated themselves.
Wow.
So, yeah, so they're having a problem. They had a problem. I was trying to be very sensitive on my presentation. I was not focused on the person who was biracial. I'm focused on the one on the outside who's using that to say, this is my selection pool I'm going to draw from when I want people in certain state positions, right? I'm not going to get a person who both parents are black because he's going to go black all the way. I'm going to get somebody who's mixed because he's going to think twice before he do this. He's going to think twice before they do that, you know. But since you mentioned the sister that flew the airplanes, Bessie Coleman.
Yeah, Bessie Coleman.
I didn't know until the archive read you that she had Indian ancestry in her, right? And suppose she said the same thing that Sidney Poitier said in that movie, right? I'm not a black woman. If she says that, I see myself as a woman, right? Not a black woman. Suppose she said that, right? Well, that would be a false statement because she wasn't recognized as a woman in the United States. You know what I mean? And women today are still at the bottom, right? About it. So if you're a woman, and women and man means mind, and woman is the womb to house the mind. And if you're a woman, a man in this country, you are entitled to all the benefits and stuff in this country. She wasn't entitled to that. That's why she had to go to France, because they wouldn't accept her over here. And then once she died over here on American soil, they would say something, she's patriotic, and she was one of ours. And I said, come on here now. Yeah. You ain't say that, did you? Yeah. Forgetting that she couldn't get a place here. She couldn't learn what she needs to learn over here. But go ahead. But I don't know if I asked your question or not. I was trying to.
I was trying to keep within the context and framework of what you have presented. But thank you so very much. This is a conversation that needs to be continued, and it's always a pleasure to hear your lectures, sir. Thank you.
All right,
thank
always
you,
a pleasure for your support too,
brother.
All right, thank you, Dr. Lush. Appreciate you, and thank you for your consistent commitment to Empowerment Saturday. We appreciate you. All right, 845-277-9250. And Slido again is 139-5473. Brother Kevin is going through it really well. And so you have an opportunity there, slido.com, to join us. Now we'll go back to the lines for Sister Anubia coming in live. She go. Show, how are you?
Hotep and peace, everyone. Hotep and peace.
Hotep, my sister.
I wanted to just quickly tag along and speak to the comment that was made, something regarding a light-skinned sister. I just didn't want to miss the opportunity to speak to our community. When I say our community, I mean the people on this line, this set of brothers and sisters who whose mission is to uplift us in terms of our consciousness, and to remind, because I know most of us on this line already know, but just to remind us and to mention to anybody on this line who don't know that that the concept of Africans, especially those Africans that are here in America, the aboriginals to this planet, we came in all shades on the continent, right? So we came in all shades on the continent. So when we look at light-skinned blacks, it's not only because we have European bloodlines, right? It's not just because the bloodlines have been mixed, but even on the continent, right? And I bear witness this for myself. Even on the continent, you have tribes that you have tribes that live in villages far in far away from cities that have not seen white people, right? And this is about 30 years ago, right? But even in those villages, there were different complexions of black people, right? So that is a myth that a lot of us still beholden to, that because you see light-skinned black people, that it is a sign of the fact that they are descendants of slave masters, or they have the products of European descendants. Now, there certainly are a lot of us who are descendants of European and mixture, you know, European and African American and European American mix. But I want us to remember a couple things. The concept of race was created for the division and the assignment of who got to colonize what, right? And who got to, it was basically a business decision, right, by the Roman Catholic Church and the king of the European divide. So when we talk about race and when we talk about colorism, I don't want us to get swept up in that myth, because we, the people, the brothers and sisters on this particular call and with this particular mission, we need to stay above the fray and know that when we're talking about light skin, dark skin, we're just using terms that they use, but we need to keep in mind that those are myths that have been perpetuated. And I just wanted to take the opportunity, since those terms were used, to reiterate and to make us remember that we came in all shades and colors, and that we are the parent of the civilizations. And so that whenever you see any colors on this planet, we are their parents. Those blue eyes and blonde hair, those are descendants. We are those blonde hair and blue eyes, we are genetic superiority to all of that. All of those things come from us. You have geneticists now that, like the genetic specialists, the DNA scientists, it's a trend now that they call themselves Africans, because they now acknowledging the fact that everybody has a descendant back to Africa, and that's according to their DNA. Okay, so I just wanted to just take a quick opportunity. You know how you don't want an opportunity to reiterate or to learn something. I just didn't want that to pass us by just because somebody said something about a licensed sister. I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to just make sure and, you know, remind any newcomers on the call, too, that the concept of race was designed and developed to divide up who could conquer who and to perpetuate a concept of superiority, right, in order to enslave and to oppress. And we always came in different shades and colors. And it had nothing to do with the European being. He came after us.
Marvin, can I comment?
That's all.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Can
thank
I kind of comment on that, sister? First thing,
yes,
I want to say, Marvin, is that sister, you need to get her on the program. And I'm up here standing up and shouting, go ahead, sister, I want to kiss her and everything. Because, it's, like you said, it's not true that everybody's light-skinned. It's light-skinned because they had a white turn. If you are jet black,
right,
if you look at the palm of my hand,
right,
on top of my hand is black.
Right.
My palm is black. If you got what we call melanocytes and it don't act the way it should, you produce something called albinism. And if you ever see a person with albino, he got your nose, your lips,
mm-hmm,
your eyes, and everything.
Yep.
But he looks what they call white. He ain't been he ain't been mixed with nobody else. So like you said, on the continent, we got people that have different complexions, right? Before the European even come into the scene. So she was right on point with that one. And the concept of race, she was right on that too. I heard her sister before, and she keeps coming with a lot of Jews. And we'll be denied a lot of great wisdom if you don't get that sister on the program. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Inubia. And thank you for that comment. Brother Kebulin, let's go back to the lines. 5416. 5416 is your turn. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment? 5416. All right.
I enjoy the program. That's all I'd like to say at this time. Keep doing what you're
all
doing.
All right. Thank you. All right, Brother John, really quickly, if you are able to, Brother Kebulin mentioned your father as a television repairman. And I just wanted to get your take on how it was to be growing up with your father as a businessman. Can you speak to that really quickly?
Yes, and I did hear that. And I was like, wow, even now, my father had an impact when people saw what he did in the community. It just, my comment on that is that there are a lot, our people always have the ability to sit up and help other people. My father was known as a television man, the repair man, but he was a doctor of television. He was a doctor of whatever it was. He practiced fixing electronic things. And he excelled because he went to school after serving in the war, World War II, and got training at Virginia Union University. I feel very proud that he served many people, not just, I used to think it was just in Churchill, but he served people throughout the city of Richmond. And I think that what is being said here on your program is reflective of people who have many different abilities and sharing them with everybody on the, that listens is helpful. My father was helpful. People who listen to this program are helpful. And they're spreading the truth about how we have evolved from, what was that program that said? I'm sorry, I can't think of it right now. He talked about guess who's coming to dinner, I think it was, with Sidney
right,
Poitier.
Yeah.
We have come a long way in our mindset. Yeah. See, once you start me off, Marvin, I'm sorry. I have some more to say, but I'm going to just leave it. I'm glad someone mentioned my father. I'm glad he mentioned him as a repair person, a person who does get something in the community. But he's just representative of a lot of other people who came back and committed. He was in the not, he was in the East End for all our lives. He tried to help people. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother John.
Hey, Marvin. I know John.
Yes, sir.
I know John, because John, his mother, my mother was the best of friends. I want to know if his entrepreneurial spirit and being busy for himself would have been cultivated had not been for his father. If John still...
The answer to that is probably, I don't think it would have been. My father was such a great example, not only business-wise, but spiritually as well. He will ask me sometimes, where did you get your spirit? Where does your desire to know the Lord come from? My father, he worshiped every Sunday. You know, he was not one who did not go and demonstrate that he loved the Lord.
All right. Thank you, John. We appreciate you. All praise is due to your dad for standing in there and being a great father. So we appreciate you for joining us, and we thank you for all your contributions as well. You're representing the Taylor family really well, sir. Thank you. Akebulan, we had 3 minutes. Final comments from you. Thank you, Brother John. Thank you, Sister Nubia.
My final comment, George. My final comment is that John, Nubia, and I think it's the name Nubia, and Lush, the ones who called and made that contribution, that pretty much summed it up for me. Because what speaker wants to see, speaker doesn't want to keep constant speaking, right? I put out information to bring out that which is already in you, and I need to hear how it was being received by those that I'm speaking to. So I appreciate John, Nubia, and Lush, and whoever else called in and made that contribution.
Thank you, sir. And thank you again for another powerful, informative lecture. Go out to that website. What was that on Asa Hilliard? What was that again?
Asa Hilliard. It's Free Your Mind. Free Your Mind, : Return to the Source. Free Your Mind, : Return to the Source by Asa, A-S-A-G, Hilliard, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D. It's about 10 segments. He got a chart and showed what time period Egypt was all black without invaders, and in what time period the invaders came in, and Cleopatra come in that period when the invaders came in.
All right. Thank you, Brother Kebulan.
You too.
Brother
George,
final comments from you.
Well, Brother, I can hear you. I subscribe to the idea that we're what our spirit is. You know, like if you have a lot of our people, I think the problem with us, you know, coming together is a lot of our people have European spirit. And I want to quote Dr. Adelaide Sanford, and she said that that black is a political statement. And so somebody could say that they're black, but it's not based on the color of their skin anymore. And so it's a lot of struggling that I think we're going to have to do to really, you know, figure out who to come together with, brother. It's become more and more complicated as we mix our ideas and cultures and all those different things. So that's my final statement, brother. And thank you again, Brother Kavanaugh, for a wonderful presentation, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Kavanaugh. Thank you for listening. It is not the color of your skin. It's the content of your character. Control your mind. Learn to know your mind, and you'll learn to know yourself. Until next week. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Another great one in the books.